And welcome to Twisted Talk. I'm Gary.
And I'm Brandon.
And we are going to continue our interview with Dr. Laura Myers, who out of the University of Alabama does research in severe weather and working with the National Weather Service and several grants and working on improving NOAA weather radio, media dissemination of severe weather warnings, hurricanes, tornadoes, and things like that, and how people react to things. I think, Brandon, one of the most interesting parts of the conversation, which will be on this episode of the show, is how people react to storms and why they react like they do. And Brandon and I will also talk to her about urban legends about severe weather, because, man, they just stick around forever.
Yes, they do. And it's going to be very interesting, I think, to discuss these things with her and to find out, why these things do stick around the way they do, and when better information comes along, how can we go about pushing back against that? So,
absolutely. So let's pick up our interview with Dr. Myers, and we will discuss all those great subjects and more on Twister Talk.
Jim actually referred to the siren mentality when we had him on the show with us here. Long ago, when the population was smaller and buildings were smaller and a lot more people spent time outdoors, maybe a siren made sense. You might be more likely to hear it. Being that that has not been the case for some time now, any thoughts on why that might be the case?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with technology and evolutions and alert notifications. A lot of people just kind of hang on to the old ways of doing things. And so it's really important that we educate our communities about all of these other options. And, there was the whole evolution of cell phones and the apps and the warnings on the apps. And a lot of the TV stations now, have their own apps, and they're educating their audiences about using those apps. And those apps are not 100% accurate either, because sometimes they don't go off as fast as, say, NOAA Weather Radio does, or an alert notification. And so a lot of people are like, well, it's confusing. There's just so many ways to get information, and I don't know which ones I ought to use. So I'll just rely on a siren, because that's the way we've always done it. And they don't realize all of the pros and cons associated with each type of notification, and especially the siren. So what's happened is a lot of communities, a lot of weather enterprises have educated their populations about the need to have multiple ways to get that information. Because Absolutely. There's a lot of criticism of NOAA Weather Radio because it's county-based and because it, goes off at any point in a 24-hour period, and it squawks a lot of information out. So a lot of people unplug it. A lot of people turn it off. But it turns out it is the direct source to the National Weather Service. Mm-hmm. You're most likely going to get your warning first from NOAA Weather Radio, and that's the one that's most likely to wake you up in the middle of the night. Your apps may not wake you up because you may be on Do Not Disturb, and you might not get it through that. You might not hear that siren if you're in bed asleep. And so each one of these different ways of getting information has its pros and cons, mm-hmm. and so we need to tap into all of those. A lot of communities have gone to these new alert notification systems that will call your phone, that will send you text messages. And so we have to educate communities that those are available to them and get people to sign up for them and actually utilize them. And we've seen a lot of advances in that, but we're still up against the situation that people are just going to go with what they've always known. Mm-hmm. And we see with every event, every season, the opportunity to educate more about that kind of information.
If I may, that actually leads me straight into another question. And you just pretty much, you took us right there. Why is it that, disproven wives' tales, urban myths, et cetera, like, for example, hiding under a highway overpass during a tornado, which was kind of popularized by the movie Twister for a while, I think, mm-hmm. and things like opening your windows to keep your house from exploding because of the pressure, when that's really not the case at all. Why are those old kind of myths and legends so difficult to dispel, even once better and proven better methodologies come along?
So it really goes back again to psychology and trust. And so when people adopt those myths, it's usually from a previous experience with a weather event. It usually comes from somebody telling them that that's the best way to prepare for an event. And so they believe those things until they know better. And so the job of the Weather Enterprise is to, one, discover what those myths are. And with every event, we talk to people and we hear those stories about, well, you know, I thought this was the best way to do it. Like with hurricanes, you know, trying to tape your windows in a hurricane. That doesn't do any good. We now have the science. There's a center over in South Carolina that actually does physical research on showing the fortification of buildings and windows in storms. And they do this thing where they actually propel a 2x4 at a window that's been taped, and that 2x4 goes straight through that window. And until we can get information like that in front of people who believe that that's a thing to do, that's a hard thing to overcome. The state of Florida has done a lot of work trying to educate their population about what works and what doesn't work, trying to overcome those myths. And with every event, they still have people who are attached to those myths. And so it's really just a matter of getting that information in front of them, trying to get them to understand. Part of the problem, too, is that a lot of people think they don't have any other ways of handling things. So they're going to do whatever they can think of or whatever they've been told in the past to do. And so we're trying to make sure that they have options. What are all the various options that you have? Because a lot of times we tell people you need to evacuate or you need to get to a shelter. And we don't take into account they might not be able to. They may not have transportation, or they may have medical needs. That means that if they try to go somewhere, they're going to have to take their oxygen with them. And they think, well, I can't do that. And so when we start to do this, we have to address those challenges and address those myths that people have and give them options. And that's a hard thing to do unless you get your whole community engaged in trying to figure that out. After Hurricane Katrina, there was a lot of work done in the New Orleans and South Mississippi area about making sure that people have the resources to act when they need to act, because otherwise they're going to rely on those myths. Those myths are things they can hang on to psychologically. And when you talk to them afterwards, if they've survived the event, you say, well, why did you do that? And they said, well, we didn't have any other options. That's the best that we could do. And if it was our day to die, it was our day to die. And when the Weather Enterprise hears that, they're so frustrated because they know there are other options. So that's what all this work is about, is trying to educate communities and people about the options that they have and the resources being provided to people who don't feel like they have the resources to respond.
That's so correct, because urban legends are what we all hang on to. Whether we know it or not, we hang on. Well, yeah, that can't happen because of this. I remember years ago, there was a very severe storm that moved over an apartment I was living in with a friend back in the 70s. And I was going, well, we're okay. Well, because it's raining. So it's raining real hard outside. So as long as it's raining, we're all right. Well, of course, later on, you realize, no, that doesn't mean anything. The tornado could have been rain wrapped and we wouldn't have known about it, because we wouldn't have seen it in the rain. All we saw was the rain, so we figured we were safe. And that was an issue. And you talk about that. I'm thinking about the Topeka, Kansas tornado in 1966. I saw people being interviewed in a documentary about that. Well, they told us the tornado would never go over Burnett's Mound, which was west of the city. So we all felt we were safe. And we were all just surprised. And this tornado went right over it and right through Topeka. And like you said, people stay with those because they think that gives them a sense of comfort. And I think that's a very eye-opening, and even in 2024, a myth that still hangs on, that, you know, they have to kind of be put down, so to speak, and realize there are much better and smarter and safer ways to gauge what's going on during severe weather.
Absolutely. And we've seen a lot of the broadcast meteorologists and the media and emergency managers do a really good job. Every time an event is approaching, they try to address those myths because they know that there are people that are hanging on to those myths. And so they'll get out there in advance of an event and remind people these things can happen this way. As you were describing those, I was thinking of some other myths, like they don't cross rivers.
Yes.
They don't hit downtown areas. Yes, they do. You know, just trying to address all of those. And it's really interesting to me how passionate the Weather Enterprise is about addressing those myths, because they know people hang on to that and they want to make sure that people are safe. So trying to reach them in ways that they can understand it. You know, it might be by telling a story. It might be by just that trust in that person. And we spend a lot of time on developing that trust between the Weather Enterprise and the public. And the public will tell you who they trust and who they believe in. And so there's a great opportunity there to overcome those myths.
This is something we've talked about a little bit on the show previously, and Jim brought it up when he was on with us here, and that is what he called the FAR, or the false alarm rate. And he pointed out how there's been much more of a concerted effort, at least in different areas in recent years, to reduce that, to bring it down to the point where people do take it seriously when they get those warnings. I think that will lead into something that we've talked about quite a bit here on the show, and that is we have seen in recent years what we consider to be a rather disturbing rise in alarmism, not just regarding weather events, but also regarding other events and disasters. It almost seems like there's, I might call it an addiction to sounding the alarm. Gary, I know you and I discussed this quite a bit last night in preparation for the show. And given events end up being exaggerated and sensationalized, even to the point where we hear new and sensational and bombastic terms, like we've joked about the term bomb cyclone, or Snowmageddon or Snowpocalypse or something like that. I think many of our listeners feel the same way as we do when we say we're getting really tired of it. What is your take on what's causing this? Why there seems to be this sort of sensationalist or even, I guess, entertainment quotient being attached to this instead of an informational or educational goal? And what could we do to kind of push back against it?
Okay. Yeah, it is a real phenomenon. And it's really proliferated because of our communication technologies, the fact that everybody can communicate now. And a lot of that's through social media and the internet. And so people are out there putting out information, and they're not exactly qualified to put out that information. And, you know, so you get, you know, the what they call these social meteorologists, not meteorologists, but media, M-E-D-I-A, rologists,
absolutely,
who are out there gathering information about the weather, and they're putting it out there in a way that they want to present it to get people to follow them. And so the actual Weather Enterprise is very frustrated by that, because you get those folks who are hyping the event, and then you've got the people who are really trying to explain it properly, and they feel like they're up against that. And that's that kind of trusted relationship again, because if you talk to the public, they're pretty good at differentiating between the hypers, the people who are hyping the weather information, and their trusted sources. And so what we tell people all the time is follow your trusted sources. Go to the ones you know that have been more accurate, more right, and don't use that sensationalism in the process of providing this information. And we do a lot of educating of the Weather Enterprise about how to keep from hyping it, you know, in terms of the words they use or how they describe these events. If you look at, you know, hurricane information in advance of a hurricane, a lot of times you'll see them put the radar imagery of the hurricane, and they'll say, can you see the monster? Can you see the face of the monster in this radar image of the hurricane? And so what they're trying to do is convey the seriousness of the hurricane, but at the same time, there's a fine line between trying to convey seriousness and scaring people and panicking people. So the big thing is, you know, trying to get the Weather Enterprise to understand what words scare people and what cause people to panic, and then realize that there's those people out there who are not certified meteorologists, they're not certified forecasters, who may be hyping that information And so they're up against trying to explain all of that. And so, I talk to people all the time about that frustration. And I tell them, your public really gets you guys. That trusted relationship, they know who to go to. You know, I think what the Weather Enterprise gets frustrated about is they're putting out all of this information in a way that they think is the best way to convey it. And then they'll get direct communication from people and say, well, so-and-so said this. We're going to get 20 inches of snow, or we're going to get a hurricane at this location. And, you know, what do I need to do? And the Weather Enterprise person will say, well, that's not what we're seeing. That's not what's going to happen. So they're having to address people individually who are listening to these other sources. And they're getting fatigued prior to the event because they're having to answer all of these individual questions that are being caused by that hyping of the event. So they ask us, the social scientists, what can we do about that? And the solution is educate your public in advance of these events, in advance of the season, about people who do that. That, you know, if you hear these kind of words, if you hear this kind of hyping, that's not what you want to be listening to. You want to go to the trusted sources and the trusted products for the information that you need. And if they'll do that in advance of the season, in advance of events, that will calm people down. Right. People will go, okay, well, I know then I need to go to this. I need to go listen to this person, or I need to go to this website. I need to go see what the Hurricane Center is saying, as opposed to, you know, whoever in social media who might be blowing this thing up.
Well, that's a big issue, because you have the whole situation going on with YouTube and places, and I see some absolutely absurd forecasting and absurd comments being made, you know, like all these awful things are going to happen. And the sad thing is, when they don't happen, no one calls these people to account, and they just keep going on. That's the blessing and curse of social media. And I've watched a few people, because they have so many subscribers, and you realize they're not even close to the forecast, but it doesn't seem to matter, because people just going to keep supporting them financially and otherwise stay with them, even though they miss it, because there's that psychological thing in all of us that we want to be up to date, that if it's going to be a disaster. Unfortunately, sometimes a lot of us thrive on disaster situations, and although we should not, we do. And, you know, when we see things on TV and stuff, we go, wow, that's incredible. Some people kind of get hooked on it, and I think that can have really damaging effects when people trying to disseminate real information about what's happening, and the real information counterrides the false information, but people will stick with the false information and then look at the other areas and saying, yeah, you don't know what you're talking about. This guy does. And it's like, and I think at times we don't know it, but I think this has some disastrous ends to that. We just never hear about it.
Well, it does. I think it creates a secondary disaster. And that's the real issue. And what I've seen is emergency managers are very frustrated by that, because they see that cascading disaster happen from all of that hyping. And so they've done a lot of work all over the country of doing preparedness outreach with their communities. They're doing YouTube videos. They're getting on the television news. They're doing virtual expos and in-person expos and educating people about how to understand weather information and how to differentiate between weather being hyped and what is actual information that is useful that they are supposed to be listening to. And they're doing a really good job of that. I work with a lot of emergency managers in Florida, for example, and I'm just fascinated with all the work they do with their publics, trying to get them more prepared and trying to overcome that particular challenge. And they're doing a really great job. I was just watching some videos earlier from the Citrus County emergency manager in Florida. And these are just little short YouTube videos where they're reminding people about how to be prepared and what information they should be listening to. Right. And, you know, they're not sitting there saying, you know, don't listen to these other folks. They're saying, listen to us, you know, and this is the information that's important. And they understand the importance of repetition with those messages. Mm-hmm. They understand the use of humor and trying to get people's attention. You know, they understand, because it used to be first responders, emergency managers, you know, they were very dry. They, you know, were very clinical. And it was just like, you know, why don't people understand? Well, now they've gotten into all the technology, the YouTube videos. They've gotten into the whole thing of, you know, how do we communicate with people? How do we use social media to try to overcome these challenges? And I've seen a lot of good work, a lot of best practices in that area.
Well, that's great. That's great to hear. Well, that concludes part two of our interview with Dr. Laura Myers. And again, I know we've said this before ad nauseum, but Brandon, we're learning a lot about what goes on behind the scenes in weather and research to inform everyday people about what's happening and how to keep on top of stuff.
Absolutely. This has been fascinating so far. I've certainly picked up on a lot of things that I didn't necessarily know before. I certainly have every confidence that our listeners and maybe even others are going to find this information incredibly useful. And I am, I've said it before, I am stoked to find out what's going to be in part three here.
Well, I'll tell you what, you'll have to wait, though, a couple of days, Brandon. But you will hear part three of our interview with Dr. Laura Myers coming up on Twister Talk just right around the bend. And for Twister Talk, I'm Gary.
And I'm Brandon.
And we'll catch you next time.